Passion and desire can attract everything you want in life. Passion by Design is a show about designing a life of passion. I'm Paula McChesney.
And I'm Sandy Peckinpah, and we're the authors of a concept and a book called Passion by Design. Our book and our show is about enhancing your life. We'll be talking about your home, your relationships, your body, your spirit, and anything else that you want to talk about.
And we're with you live every Wednesday afternoon at 2:05 to discuss living life fully through the senses here on AM 1240 KNRY. We'd love to hear from you, so call in and join us at 831-373-1234. Hello, Sandy.
Hola. So guess where I am?
Tell me.
I'm in beautiful Newport Beach, California. It is the most glorious sunny day, and I'm right across from Fashion Island in the Marriott Hotel. We're having a big seminar, and for me, it's a real estate seminar, and I'm learning so much about the interaction of social media, radio, television, all of those things, and it's so fascinating. It's so inspiring, and I think that's what you and I love about going to these events, because we always come away with something, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. And there is so much great information out there on all variety of subjects. And we have really made an effort on our show, Passion by Design, Designing and Living a Life of Passion, to bring information to people that is inspiring, it's informative, it's motivating, and, you know, just really give you a valuable hour of joy and pleasure and passion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And right. And so that's, you know, having all of our different guests who are so knowledgeable and such experts in their field, mm-hmm, is really a joy for me, and I know it is for you as well.
Well, I think, and if I think our goal in our radio show is if the listener can come away with one new idea, hallelujah.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm so interested with our combination of what you do, Sandy, and what I do, because you, as a designer, I'm obviously working in people's homes and offices and creating really beautiful functional spaces. And what you're doing in your work as a real estate agent is you are helping connect the right people with the right homes,
mm-hmm,
and finding the homes that meet their dreams and their hopes and their aspirations, whether it's for a couple or maybe it's a family with children, you know, or
mm-hmm,
family with
right,
horses. You know,
it's like uniting the dream with the family or the person or the investor who hopes to make it a way of retirement. I think that real estate is a wonderful expression of helping people find their dreams. And for you, interior design is a wonderful expression of people living in their homes and their spaces.
Well, it's really true. And our guest today, and I'm so thrilled because we're going to be discussing one of my all-time favorite topics, which is color. And I've actually been known in the industry for many, many years as the queen of color, because
I never
do beige.
You started out that way with your color business up in San Francisco.
That I did indeed, and I'm going to share a little bit about that now. I was fortunate enough to, when I came to San Francisco in the early 80s, to through a series of very happy and synchronous events, became involved very much in doing color for fashion. And back in the early 80s, there was a great movement, which I actually have firmly embraced in my own way, to identify what colors really suited your personality and clothing, and to make clothing choices, the correct colors in clothing. Let me spit that out, Paula. Choose the color clothing that looks good on you is what I'm trying to say. And people were getting educated about this very much in San Francisco and New York and I think across the country. And I looked at the system, having a background in art, and I thought, you know, there's some very great things about this, and I think that I can create an even better system. And I did, and I created what was called Color Concepts, the Image Institute. And I had my office on Maiden Lane, just off Union Square in San Francisco, for quite a while. Great location. And really had the opportunity to make some amazing changes in people's lives and how they presented themselves by bringing them an awareness and a joy of color. And it was tremendously rewarding. And I evolved back into my previous career of design for home, of course, incorporating color and fashion and all of these things. So our guest today is one of my cohorts, my partners in crime, Lynn Rutter. Lynn is a San Francisco fine artist. She has done all of my painting, decorative, mural work for, I would say, over 10 years. She is not only a superb fine artist, she is an excellent businesswoman. And I have to tell you that it's such a joy working with someone with an artistic temperament, and I include myself in that, to have the privilege of working with someone who follows through on the business end. When Lynn Rutter says, "I will have a bid for you by tomorrow," she has the bid by tomorrow. It's clean, it's neat, it's well thought out. She's a joy to work with. So welcome to the show, Lynn.
Thanks, Paula. Don't forget
welcome,
that the bids
Lynn.
Are on beautiful stationery.
What's that?
Don't forget that the bids are also on beautiful stationery.
And they're on beautiful stationery. Absolutely, they are.
She knows how to do it right.
She does. She does. And you're a credit to your profession, Lynn. And I say that, and you and I have become friends as a result of working together. And I absolutely recommend you without any hesitation. I know that you will be a professional part of my team with a new client or an existing client. And we actually, Sandy, I think I mentioned this to you, Lynn and I have the privilege to start working with a client that we worked with 10 years ago. And they had moved out of the area, they've moved back, they've called us back out again. Yeah. So that feels really, really good to me.
Well, that repeat is validation. That repeat business.
It is. It really mm-hmm. is. So, Lynn, there's a whole lot of things I want to talk about today, and I think I would start by having you tell our listening audience just a little bit about your background as an artist and as a business person.
Oh, okay. Well, first I want to say hi, Sandy, because I'm actually from Newport Beach. I grew up there. So.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I know how beautiful it can be.
Yeah.
It's awfully pleasant there. So yeah, I grew up in Southern California, and I went to UC Berkeley in large part because I had fallen in love with San Francisco. I just got one look at this place when I was young and went, I think that's where I belong. And just because it's such an attractive city to be in and drive through. And, you know, as prestigious as it is to get into Cal, I really made the choice just because of where it was, not so much because it, you know, looked good on paper. Mm-hmm. So I think I have always made my decisions that way. And I studied architecture and design and majored in fine art and was kind of heading in the direction of interior architecture, but I fell into scenic art and through, you know, a lot of volunteering as a student, painting sets. You know, when you audition for a singing role and then they find out you can paint, guess what happens?
No kidding, really?
Oh, can you sew?
Oh, that's great.
So I, you know, I was doing a turn with the San Francisco Opera in the scenic department, but, you know, not being a union painter and not being really trained as a scenic painter because it's really quite a thing in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, started freelancing with faux finishers in the early 80s. You know, there really weren't that many of us. And, you know, to be honest, you didn't have to be that great at it to make decent money. So And then one day I was, working at one of my various temp jobs, and I met these two guys who actually had a business painting murals, and I went to work for them for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they grew to be, $2 million a year business, sent me all over the world painting and installing, huge commercial murals. And that got to be, a little hard on my life, being itinerant.
Mm-hmm.
So I eventually started my own business, and that's been 20 years now.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe more. Ooh, what year is this?
Ooh. after 20, Lynn, we kind of stopped counting. That's my theory.
A long time ago. I've had a lot of work done. I look great.
You look great. And Lynn,
I was just going to ask the quick question, if you don't mind. You really didn't grow up drawing or having a fascination with art?
Oh, absolutely. But I was also a math brain, and and I loved music, and I really couldn't make up my mind what I wanted to do. And of course, it seemed more because I am kind of business oriented, and I wanted to do something different. I didn't know what the title for my profession was going to be. So I studied architecture because I was really interested in, particularly with historic architecture, having traveled in Europe a lot, even as a young person. So, yes, I was always drawing and painting and that sort of thing, but it never occurred to me that there was actually any way to make a living doing that and make a career out of that.
Wow.
So over the course of the years, I picked up techniques and education, from completely disparate sources, and it turns out that being a decorative artist marries all of those things. I can read plans, I can draw plans, I know the names of all the parts of the facade of the house. I'm able to communicate with architects and builders and painters, and it just marries a lot of different skills, and I really like that about it. None of my education has gone to waste at all.
Well, Lynn, I'm going to just interject here for a moment, because I know a lot of our listeners like to look at your website while we're on the air, and you have a fantastically beautiful website, in my opinion. So it's www.lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, Rutter, Rutter.com. And particularly, I love what you're doing with your blog. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But I know some people really enjoy when they can be looking at the visuals, especially since today's topic is so visual. So, www.lynnrutter.com for those of you who want to go and look at it. Lynn, I want to talk about what's happening in the industry now. We are in 2011. We have gone through, and some will say we are still in, a bit of an economic readjustment. How's that for a politically correct term? That's pretty good. I just made that up.
If it makes you feel better, honey.
I just made that up. Anything that makes me feel better, I'm all about. And I certainly know that in the interior design world, which is my world, there have been a lot of changes. And you and I have talked about this a lot.
Uh-huh.
What would you say in your world of decorative finishes and painting and murals and fine art, what are you seeing happening now as opposed to what was happening, say, 4 years ago?
Well, a few years ago, I noticed that people seemed to be far more interested in things that were flat and graphic. And, that is a demand that wallpaper fills very well.
Mm-hmm.
I did just paint a hexagonal, sort of David Hicks type pattern on a floor for someone just last week.
Oh, fun.
I have to say there are times where wallpaper just doesn't cut it. It won't give you custom scale, custom color. Maybe you can get it in the color you want, but if it's not the right scale for your space, it could be a disaster. So I did notice a trend towards a flat, what we call conventional ornament, geometric stuff, patterns, and people seem to be moving away from the layers of color, the soft atmosphere, the glazes, the Venetian plasters, maybe not so much that old world look, and kind of something more more mid-century even. Mm-hmm. So I found myself doing a lot more work with just color and pattern and not really talking about images so much.
So, Lynn, define for our listening audience what you mean when you say mid-century. I know what you mean, but they probably don't.
Oh, well, mid-20th century. So, say, any time, I think what we define as mid-century design is anything post-World War II and pre-1970.
So what does that actually mean? What does it look like?
It's clean and modern, which is not to say that what came before it, being say Art Deco, wasn't.
Right.
It's more about the void spaces and the clean lines and the sort of, you know, the flat plane of something, rather than sculptural ornament, you know, embellishment.
Right.
And so you have designers like, you know, like the what a lot of people think of as Danish modern, you know, teak furniture, things that are very streamlined and simple, you know, was really, really popular, you know, actually well through the 70s, although I think, you know, as a kid I noticed there was a big change in the 70s as well. So, mid-century modern really just refers to that very clean kind of Jetsons-like 50s, 60s, Mad Men.
Right, right.
All the style of Mad Men.
Right.
God, I love that show.
What was going on Madison Avenue.
The style of the interiors, that's mid-century modern.
And you had to be smoking a cigarette, too, you know, and have a martini in your hand at the time.
And it was all about materials, you know. Glass looked like glass, and wood looked like wood. Wood was not gilded or painted to look like anything other than wood.
Mm-hmm.
So materials were speaking for themselves, and the geometric plane, you know, the sort of space you were in also spoke for itself. And out of that, you know, there was some bad hangover from that, which was, you know, rectangular houses with 8-foot ceilings that were left white.
That's a personal joke.
As an interior designer, Paula, can you fix 8-foot ceilings, or is that going to be a problem forever? Is that like a teardown?
Well, no. It's definitely not a teardown, but
we could do a whole show on that.
We could do it. And I definitely don't leave the ceilings white. And actually, let's talk about color and ceilings for a minute.
Okay.
Lynn and I, I'm going to digress for a second. The way we work is, I think, very somewhat unique and very special in that generally I will bring the job, I will be contacted by a client. I will develop the design concept, what I want to bring out for the client after asking them, you know, what are their desires in this home? Do they want it to be very much a blend of her taste and his taste? Is it, you know, is it mostly about the children, the dogs? Is it, you know, that she wants some private space and then he wants his man cave? What is the home trying to do? And I spend a great deal of time really understanding that foundation so that once we start working, I can almost work without the client's constant input. And it really takes a lot of pressure off of the clients. They really like it. And so I'll have quite a good idea of what I'm going to create when I go to Lynn. And I say, okay, for example, I'll just pick a job. We did a wonderful job in Palo Alto where the client had purchased a Mediterranean home with a two-story living room. And we had worked with these clients before, so they knew us and they trusted us and knew what we could do. And I came up with the idea of creating this very elegant Italian decorative ceiling treatment and with heavy beams and decorative work. And so I took it to Lynn, and together we worked out the logistics of that, what that was going to look like, what kind of color palette we were going to bring in, and, you know, how we were going to create that. And then Lynn is fantastic, as I said, at presenting a very professional bid to the client, as well as the color boards. So the client gets an extremely clear version of what they're going to get. And I have to say, in all the years we've worked together, you know, touch wood, you and I have never had to do a redo because the client was not happy. The clients are always, always happy because we do our homework up front.
Yeah, and another thing is because the communication, I mean, Paula translates what the client wants into a visual language that I can use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if I go talk to the client and they say, oh, I don't know, this is too cold. Well, I don't know what that means. You know what I mean? So, and actually, in that particular case, as I recall, the client had a carpet that we needed to work around, and
yes.
They kept showing me pictures of what they liked, of Italian rustic interiors that were yellow ochre and terracotta and warm, and then they had this carpet that was blue and rose, and I couldn't reconcile, you know.
But
the,
I could, because
yeah,
I knew.
Yeah, the Italian Tuscan
request
with the color of the carpet, so then I came up with the idea of using a more Baroque palette rather than a Renaissance palette.
Right.
Which was cooler and more Easter egg-like, you know.
And it turned out to be absolutely beautiful, because the rug that they had purchased was stunning rug. This was for their previous home, which was more of French style. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful piece. And it really was quite challenging and really fun, you know, really stretched us, because we worked and worked and worked to how do we pull this into something very elegant, and we'll transition from one home to another, even though the homes were extremely different. And this is something that I think as a designer, and you, Lynn, as part of my team, we're able to take what people have from one home and transition it successfully to the next home because of our ability to see beyond what's just right in front of us. And that comes from, we'll just leave it at 20 years experience each, but it's probably a little bit more than that.
As I recall, it took us almost the entire bottle of champagne to figure out what we were going to do.
She's telling all our secrets here.
How we were going to deal with the carpet color, because it was such a beautiful piece and it fit in the room perfectly. It just filled the entire room, and there was no way they were not going to use it. And then it just kind of came out like, well, you know, when they say they want ochre, warm, you know, terracotta, you know, whatever, what they're talking about are earth colors. And I mean, when you walk into that room now, you would not know that those walls have no yellow in them.
Exactly.
They look gold. They look warm.
Mm-hmm.
But they also go with the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I think both of you are saying is that ultimately what people want is a feeling. So they're trying to look at something and trying to translate a feeling. And so what it is, the job of Paula and ultimately to you, to translate, to give them the feeling that they're wanting in their home.
Right.
Absolutely. And actually, the ceiling is the thing that kind of announces what the whole house is about.
Yes.
In this particular sort of, it's a entry kind of great room with a very soaring ceiling. And by putting that Italian ornament up on the ceiling, and it's all hand-painted and has a little bit of gold leaf, and when you walk in there, you're just transported into a different place, and that's the kind of thing that they tell Paula, they tell their designer, and then their designer turns it into the more nuts and bolts things that I need to hear in order to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because, you know, there's a technical language that you speak with tradespeople, and then there's a kind of a more fuzzy or emotional language that you have to speak with the client.
Right, and often I find, too, that the client doesn't really know. They think, as you said, Lynn, they think they want one thing, but I think one of the things that I love about working with clients directly and very closely is I am able to interpret what they're saying and what they're not saying, and able to bring that out into a finished product that they're really happy with. Whereas if we had just given them ochre and brown and, you know, earth tones that they were looking for, they would have hated it because it would have been really wrong.
Yeah, they would have moved in and all their stuff would look bad.
Would look horrible.
It would not have looked bad.
It would have looked horrible.
And I have to say, when I work directly for the client, I mean, we could move into this neighborhood.
Yes.
The business end of it is that, you know, when I work with a designer, obviously my work is being marked up or there's a commission being paid to the designer. And that is, you know, that's kind of the standard way that this business works. And it works that way for a very good reason. Well, these days, because of the change in the economy and the way people tend, and also the internet, people tend to be more hands-on, want to try and do more themselves. And they tend to call me directly. And I have to work, I have to say, 20% harder to get that job done without the help of a designer. So it doesn't necessarily save the client money. I mean, it's possible to do it, but it doesn't necessarily save money. When people do their own decorating, they make expensive mistakes, and there can be communication problems. And an experienced designer really helps you avoid that. So when I walk into a house and it's, you know, empty of furniture and they need the whole works done, the first thing I will do is wave my hands and say, I think we need to get you a decorator. You know, let's just back up and look at the big picture here, because, you know, just painting the ceiling would be really great, but what about the rest of the house? You know, what happens when that ceiling no longer goes with all the other choices you make?
Well, and two, Lynn, and we're going to go to a break in just a moment, but I think you made a good point when you and I were talking the other day, is people think that if they go directly to you, they're getting wholesale. Well, what you said to me was, there is no such thing as wholesale.
There is no wholesale. It's custom.
It's custom. Yeah.
There is no such thing as wholesale anymore.
Yeah. It's a different world, and we're going to talk about that world a little bit, about how to work with a designer and your decorative artist when we come back from a break. So this is Passion by Design. If you're just joining us, we're talking about color with San Francisco artist extraordinaire Lynn Rutter. We are on AM 1240 KNRY. We'll be right back.
Do you want to get into the best shape of your life? My name is Ellen Bradley Gannis, and I've actually helped thousands of people not only transform their body, but improve their health and the way they feel every day. Fad diets are unsafe and they don't work. If you're really ready for a change, visit me now at www.passioncleanse.com. Free personal coaching and money back guaranteed.
Welcome back. We have Lynn Rutter with us, and this is Passion by Design, and today we are talking about color. And I want to just share with our listening audience that I will be presenting a color workshop next May. It will be on Saturday, May 21st, here in Monterey at Ferguson's Bath, Kitchen, and Lighting Gallery. There will be information on our website, which is www.passionbydesign.com. I will be talking about color, giving you some very practical and usable information about how to use color in your home, particularly for spring and summer, to freshen things up, put a new look on it, put a new face on it, get what I call the most bang for your buck. And I will be answering individual questions. If you call in and book an appointment, you will have a session with me just for booking that appointment, and there'll be more information. So make sure and mark it on your calendars, and we'll talk to you more about that. And
Paula, will you be autographing books too?
And I will. Thank you, Sandy. See,
yes.
This is why I have my team here. And yes, we will have our book, which is Passion by Design. There, we will be signing those for you. And those are also on our website and Amazon and bookstores if you like that. So, Lynn.
Yes.
Why would someone choose let's talk about wallpaper just for a quick second before we go on, because I think a lot of people have questions about this. Why would someone choose a painted surface as opposed to a wallpaper, or a wallpaper as opposed to a painted surface? Just touch on that quickly, because I get a lot of questions about that.
I think in general, because wallpaper is printed, that it has a sort of an even, slightly plasticky sheen. That's not to say that it's made of plastic, but it has a definite flat kind of sheen to it. It has a surface to it that is even across the whole paper, and it has some seams, which, you know, depending on the paper, may or may not be a problem. If it's hand-painted wallpaper like DeGorne or something, you know, incredibly fabulous like that, well, mm-hmm. then that's a totally different matter. Those are a specific look. Wallpaper is a really great way to get a repeated pattern or a complicated multicolor design affordably, and you know, tends to be more democratic that way. I mean, the whole point of like William Morris's wallpaper was to make beauty accessible to the masses. Mm-hmm. And there are some gorgeous, gorgeous wallpapers out there. And there are a lot of times where people will ask me for something, and I'd say, you know, this is a job for wallpaper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell our audience who William Morris was.
It is a little limited because you got to pick it out of a catalog of mm-hmm. what's already been designed and made, and sometimes that isn't scaled properly to your space.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see a certain number of elements repeated, you know, in a nice odd number. And if you have, like, say you have special problems with a room, it's really wonky, it has an angle, a curve in it, there's printed products are not necessarily going to be helpful in those situations. And you can have patterns stenciled or painted on your walls and manage the sheen and use metallics and work on difficult surfaces that you can't do with wallpaper.
Mm-hmm.
Most people come to me because they have a very unusual problem, like, you know, a big high ceiling that they want the room to look more intimate, or, you know, they just closed up a window and now you walk down the hall and look at a blank wall and they just want something there and they don't know what. And when you work with a decorative painter, what you're getting is custom. You're getting a design that is designed just for that space. And it will, you know, the paint can very easily be matched to any colors that are also being used in the room. The surface can be addressed. The sheen can be addressed. The color, the scale, everything is custom and site specific. So that's the principal difference between using those two things.
Well, let's talk about cost for a minute here, because I know mm-hmm. that cost is a concern for people.
Yeah. And I think in general, you know, I, like I said, it's custom. It's not out of a catalog. And so it depending on your area, a decorative painter is going to cost more than, you know, a wallpaper installation. There are definitely some wallpapers out there that cost a lot of money, though.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, it kind of varies by region. You know, some markets, they just, you know, they're just, people just don't pay as much as they will. San Francisco is a very expensive area, and there are a lot of affluent people here. And so demands on my time are pretty high. And so my rates tend to be pretty high, cause, mm-hmm. you know.
There's only so many hours in
yeah.
the day. Mm-hmm. Well, tell me, we were talking the other day about a client who had a budget of $2,500. And
yeah.
that's a fairly small budget for what they wanted. Describe that job, if you would, please.
That was a bumpy, like, or what do you call the texture where they blow the sheetrock mud out of a hopper?
Ugly. Sorry, orange peel.
Orange peel, okay.
Sorry.
It was orange peel wall. It was 30 feet long. And I'll tell you, for $2,500, you might even have a hard time just getting a regular old paint contractor to put a flat color on there,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it had an inset, and it was very uneven, and it had a slight curve to it. And it was in a veterinary ophthalmologist's office.
Mm-hmm.
This is a doctor who specialized in doing sight correction and eye health for animals.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from birds to giraffes, you know,
wow.
seriously.
Wow.
And they wanted to put a mural on this wall. It was this long, skinny hallway. And they wanted something, you know, the things I was hearing from them was that, you know, people come in here and their animals are sick and they're distressed and they want something that will calm them down and give them something to look at, and but also have a message about the connection, the visual connection, the sight connection between people and their animals.
Mm-hmm.
Or animals and their people is probably a better way to say it.
Exactly, yes.
But they had a budget that, you know, $2,500 is not enough to cover a 30-foot wall with a mural. It just isn't.
Exactly.
But it's still a fair amount of money. I mean, don't let anyone tell you $2,500 isn't a lot of money. I wouldn't spend that kind of money without thinking hard about it.
Absolutely.
So I came up with a solution that really just involved the color, putting a color there that would be calm and open space up, and make the bumpy texture not so visible. And that color in this case was a nice robin's egg blue, almost a sky blue, but just with a little warmth to it. And then I painted a mural for them that was just silhouette. So really all it was the design, a little girl with her dog, and a dog running after a ball, and a lady with a poodle, you know, with the poodle haircut, and a bulldog having an interaction with a horse. And they're all looking at each other, all looking at something. But it's all done in silhouette, so all I had to do was draw it and paint it. There wasn't modeling, and I got it done inside of a week, and actually 3 days, because I could only work every other day because they were open, you know,
mm-hmm.
and paint around animals, not good.
Mm-hmm.
So I took all their considerations and designed something within their budget that would do what they most wanted it to do.
And there's no way they could have gotten a wallpaper to do that.
Oh, absolutely not. They would have had to resurface the wall.
Right.
And
you know, Lynn, that's a really amazing thing because you gave them a great gift in giving them something. I noticed that you said something that was calming. And I think, you know, with, animals get agitated, but of course, I think, aren't animals colorblind somewhat? I've heard that. Maybe that's not true, but
I don't know. I should ask my client.
I've heard that as well.
You gave them an option of having the owners be calm, because I'm sure it's really, you know, it's so hard just taking my dog into the vet. She's excited. She's all over the place and, mm-hmm. you know, wants to mark her territory and everything. And you gave them a very calming entrance to something that could potentially be kind of upsetting.
I wish more human doctors would think about the space that you're walking through.
Oh, gosh, I do too.
Well, you know, I think that this part of what I want to do with what we're talking about today is to really educate people to just, you gave a beautiful example, Lynn, of, you know, people think using a designer is expensive and using an artist is expensive. And the reality is that, yes, it can be, and yes, it can also give you so much for your budget. And
right.
I really urge people to explore your options. You know, call in the designer at the beginning of the job. And this is I don't know whether any of our listeners heard the show that we did with Randy Strong of Carolyn Strong Contractors. But we were talking a great deal about the whole team approach mm-hmm. to a project, whether it's a home or a doctor's office or whatever it is. And when you get your team together at the beginning, you really get the best of the best.
Yeah.
And I hear people saying, well, I'm not going to do any furniture, you know, for several more months. We're building the house, so I'm not going to bring the designer in. That is a huge, huge, huge mistake. And the reason being is that if you've got your team together at the beginning, even if the designer isn't doing a lot in terms of furnishings at the beginning, there's really that input to say, let's make sure we're all moving in the right direction and nothing has to be redone, walls moved, or, you know, windows that don't really work, so you have to spend a whole lot more on perhaps concealing it with a decorative element or whatever. So I urge our listeners to consider at least get a consultation from a designer and your decorative artist right up front at the very beginning.
I'd really like coming into the job before the remodel happens, because I can often save people an awful lot of headache if we have a master plan going in.
Right.
And even if they don't, say maybe they don't commission the mural right away because, you know, they've just spent a whole bunch of money on a remodel and that's, so it's, you know, it's down the pike, but I can tell them how to prep the wall so that, you know, they can live with it for a year or so while they wait until they do phase two.
Exactly.
And then
the wall is...
what happens is you got to go back in and and alter the, you know, or I'm having a more challenging situation because I'm dealing with a finished out space that wasn't finished out to accommodate the mural that they're asking for.
Exactly.
So, I mean, a master plan, even if you don't have a designer do all the work for you, I mean, you know what you're really paying for with a designer is expertise and resources and
experience
and the consulting. And most designers do work that way now.
Mm-hmm.
That the old-fashioned way of doing it, where you know you just the designer would just come in and stage the room, and you know, ta-da! And I mean that's Sister Parish era. We don't do it that way anymore.
Well, I
think
it's
very collaborative with the client, and the client can do as much or as little as they want. But you need the expertise. You need the director, as it were.
Right. Right. And every, you know, I found that my clients break down, or I think any client breaks down into one of three categories. And it's one is the client that wants an initial collaboration, gets the dream, the desire, the goal across, and then the designer goes and makes it happen. That's one type client. Another type client is they want some interaction. You know, they kind of like the process of looking for an antique or you know, looking for a bit of this or a bit of that. But basically, they need a lot of guidance, but they want to play too. And then the third category is really the person who absolutely wants to do it themselves, and they're smart enough to know that they need some guidance. And any and all of those categories are great. It's just really useful to be clear at the beginning what it is you want, so you as the end user, the client, can get your needs met and have the process be a successful and a happy process.
Paula, I think that's an important point, because I think a lot of times people have the misconception that if they hire a designer, the house is no longer theirs. It's the designer's vision. And how do you incorporate their vision into their home, implementing your skill and your talents as a designer?
Well, I do a lot of listening, and I do a lot of asking questions. Mm-hmm. And again, it's sometimes I seem to have an ability to interpret what they're saying and what they're not saying. And I developed a process a long time ago, which I've described before, but I'll share it again here. It's a process where I created what I call a personal style portfolio. And I have separated my own work, my own body of work, from this. This is a whole portfolio of different pictures of rooms, and I group the rooms, all living rooms, all kitchens, all bedrooms, bathrooms, etc. And I have, and if it's a couple, I have the couple sit down together. It takes only about 45 minutes, and I have them flip through the pictures and say, give me your feeling about this. Nothing.
Now, this isn't your work,
this
correct?
Is not my work, no.
Okay.
This is independent pictures that I've gathered from magazines, from various sources.
And why do you do that?
Because I separate it from my own work, because our society is taught to be polite and have good manners, and nobody's going to say, oh, my gosh, I hate that room that you designed, Paula.
Right.
So I learned that one a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so they're able to flip through this and say, I like this, I hate that, I like, you know, this is interesting, I kind of like that, wow, I never thought about that, but I like it. And I do the same thing with a fan deck of colors. And it's fascinating to me when you do it with a couple, because the husband will say, or the man will say, well, I like that, and the wife will go, you like that? Or vice versa. And it's really quite a useful tool between the two of them, and to get a dialogue going. And at the end of that 45 minutes, I will summarize for them, and I'll say, okay, you know, Mr. you know, Smith, what you want is you want comfort and you want functionality. You want to have that big comfy chair that when you come home from work, you can flop down and put your feet up. And when I have his head nodding up and down, I know I'm on track. Mm-hmm. And then when I say, you know, Mrs. So-and-so, you want it to be really pretty. You want it to be, when your friends come over, you want to be proud of your home. And when her head's going up and down, I know I'm on track. And that lays my foundation to work, and from that I can go forward very efficiently. I know what resources to go to. I know what resources to totally avoid. So I become a very efficient tool for you from laying that foundation work. Does that make
sense? That's a great idea.
The ink blot test.
I do a similar thing with people, because I do like to... I'll ask them to collect their own images,
mm-hmm.
Not necessarily of rooms, but just pictures, just rip
mm-hmm.
pictures out of magazines,
right.
Or download them off of Google or whatever,
mm-hmm.
just anything that's inspiring that will indicate what kind of taste they have. I do a lot of exterior color consulting as well, so I'll ask people to drive around and send me the addresses of the houses that they think are nice looking, and I will be able to find a common thread in those things.
Exactly.
Lynn, I have a quick question for you. Now, would you paint something for someone's home? And in fact, the most exquisite thing that I ever saw was the piece that you did, Paula, for your client that you had hired Lynn for the ceiling in the dining room, and it was the scene of the vineyards, I think.
Oh yes, wasn't that pretty?
It was so exquisite on the ceiling of a dining room. But now, do you make your work? Is your work, once you give that to a client, is that one of a kind? You will never repeat that work.
Absolutely not. Yeah, I do everything for that client. I've had people call me, or email me and ask me, I want a mural just like that. How much is it? And I can't tell them because I won't do it again.
Wow.
I want to design something for that place. And have it fit perfectly, in there. So, I might use some of the same techniques or ornamental elements in another mural later on. But I don't ever copy the mural outright and do it again. I mean, that's the main advantage to having work done custom is that it is unique. And it's just yours.
Lynn, what are you seeing on some trends now in the world of decorative painting? What are people asking for? What are you seeing? What are you doing more of now? What are some trends?
Well, I have to say, in general, the trend towards, wall finishes and this sort of traditional, or what has been popular for a long time, what people call faux or, wall finishes is definitely not something I'm hearing requests for anymore. That's like I was saying earlier, people seem to be far more interested in things that are flat or have patterns, and they don't seem to be interested in the old world finish, rustic, old plaster feeling anymore. That's not to say it won't come back, because it is kind of perennial, and there are some. There are some architectural spaces that really just scream for that.
Yes,
and so those places will always do that. I am seeing more people asking for things that are highly individual, that involve bold, saturated color, which I think is great because I love that.
Mm-hmm.
After years and years and years of seeing, nothing but, beige sponge painted walls. I'm so ready to, just have everything be canary yellow with a blue stripe, whatever they want.
You're going to scare them off, Lynn.
I don't want to scare them off. No, there's definitely a place for subtle, and there's definitely a place for color, but I am seeing more people being fearless about color. I think this is also a what's going on in the world thing. I think people are attracted to color because it makes them feel good. And when things are tough elsewhere in the world, when they go home, they want their home to have something that makes them feel good.
Right. I agree.
And it's uplifting and that sort of thing. And it can also be very statement-making. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, there is the sort of more monochromatic room. I'm seeing a lot of that as well. That sort of Belgian, washed linen, 18 different shades of gray,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing, which is also very a very difficult balance to achieve. You actually have to understand color really, really well, because balancing a palette that is so close in value and so neutral can be very, very tricky.
It's a very elegant solution,
and it's
a tricky one. We've got just another couple minutes, mm-hmm. but in our last few minutes, Lynn, really quickly, please, you've got a client that wants you to do a large job for them that they want to not be tired of in 10 years. What are you advising them to do?
I'm advising them to stay away from color combinations that are very of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say trendy because some things just never go out of style.
I call that faddish.
Yeah, there are color fads, certain combinations, which through the decades I have watched,
mm-hmm.
come and go. And I know that there's a huge number of people who work really hard on forecasting those colors and trying to make them flow from one year to the next. For example, you don't want a hotel to order a carpet that has a color combination that's going to be out next year.
Exactly.
So they have to. I notice these color combinations, and I will steer them clear of those. It's not the color that goes out of fashion, but the combination of the colors.
Exactly. And Lynn, let me interject here because we're coming to a close. But mm-hmm. if you had 2 points to leave our listening audience with about working with a decorative artist, what would those 2 points be? And then I'd like you to give your website as well.
Okay. Those 2 points would be do what you love. Like, mm-hmm. acknowledge what you're attracted to and you gravitate to and just embrace that, because it's far better to be in love with something than to think that it's going to last forever, because the more you love it, the longer you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then the
Good
other
point.
Thing is just trust your gut.
Mm.
Always just trust your gut and don't be afraid to, just believe in yourself and your own desires.
Absolutely. And Lynn, what is your website and how can people find you?
You can find me at my website at lynnrutter.com. That's LynnRutter. Or on my blog, which is called The Ornamentalist, and that it is at ornamentalist.net.
Okay. Lynn, thank you so much. You've just got such a wealth of information, and you are a local, meaning you're in the Bay Area. You will work mm-hmm. all over with me. I know you will. Thank you, and we will have you back again. There's so much more information. Our hour is already coming to a close.
Goodness.
So,
thanks so much. It was fun.
Thank you, Lynn. And
thank
please
you.
Enjoy visiting our website, which is www.passionbydesign.com. where you'll find more information about living your life with passion, as well as being able to purchase our book, Passion by Design. I'm Paula McChesney.
And I'm Sandy Peckinpah. Join us next week, Wednesday afternoon at 2:05 on AM 1240, KNRY, for another hour of Passion by Design.
Community radio for the Central Coast.
AM 1240, KNRY, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz.